the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We are efforting to connect with Kim Mulkey, who is a part, Jimmy, of a very impressive class that will join the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes, she is. And her credentials are remarkable, what she has been able to do. What I found interesting is that she was actually an assistant coach at Louisiana Tech for like 15 or 16 years before she got the Baylor head coaching job. And then she won 600 games faster than any other women's basketball coach. So she's certainly put together an incredible resume.
That's right. And again, we hope to connect with her in mere moments. But we look forward to being joined a little bit later this hour by Ron Higgins, as he will join us to talk some football. He's with Tiger Rag and then John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. So a full afternoon. And, Jimmy, we now go to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline for a very special guest.
Yes, we do. Kim Mulkey, she was selected for induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame, a fabulous honor. She was the first ever to win a national championship in women's basketball and then to coach a national championship in women's basketball, and also the only one to win one as a player, assistant coach, and a head coach. Kim, how are you?
I'm doing as good as possible. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing fantastic. We really appreciate you joining us. I understand that with what we've got going on right now, they had a neighborhood parade. Cars were driving by, honking and waving to you in celebration, right?
Yes, that was very touching. I had just done a Zoom press conference in my office at the house and was eating a little bit of lunch, and my daughter called and asked if I would step outside, that the grandchild wanted to see me, and so I did. And then all of a sudden, cars came by honking and blowing their horns. Man, it was impressive. It was so touching. It lasted, gosh, I guess 15 to 20 minutes. Neighbors came out of their homes, and they were taking video, and I got emotional. It was just something that you would have, well, y'all probably did see it. It's been all over,
yeah.
And I think went viral, but it was touching.
You had a phenomenal career, four consecutive state championships in high school, two national championships at Louisiana Tech. Kim, at what point did you decide you wanted to get into coaching?
I never was going to be a coach. Our degree is in business administration. After playing in the 84 Olympics under Pat Summitt, I came back and received a postgraduate scholarship from the NCAA. And I was working on my MBA at Louisiana Tech. And then President F.J. Taylor sent the campus security to get me out of class. He wanted to talk to me, and little did I know what about. And when I got up there, he just basically demanded, I don't even know if I'd say he asked because he wouldn't take no for an answer, that he was getting ready to make Leon Barmore the head coach at Louisiana Tech after Sonja Hoag was retiring, and that he wanted me to be on his staff. And I fought him a day or two and just told him I was ready to move on and wanted to become a CEO in the business world and fly all over the country. And gosh, he just wouldn't take no for an answer. And so the rest is history. 35 years later, I am doing what F.J. Taylor thought I needed to be doing.
I realized that you're thankful for what you have, and hopefully everybody is safe and sound in your world. At the same time, I know it's got to be tough to have seen this time come and go when we didn't get to perhaps see you square off against Oregon or South Carolina. What has it been like to now pass the point in time in which the championship for this year would have been crowned?
It's really a weird feeling. Initially, you're extremely disappointed. Your players are very emotional. Initially, you don't understand. You keep asking, why so abruptly do you cancel this? Let's just suspend things indefinitely. And then as time goes on and we all become a little bit more educated and and understand and learn more, you now know why it was canceled so abruptly. And the hard part for me is that there's been no closure. We haven't had our final team meeting. Our kids still have their good their belongings in the dorm and in their apartments. And who knows when they will be back to be able to retrieve any of that or even get back on campus to be in school, because we now have been told that at Baylor University, summer classes will be online as well. So I think just sitting here with no finality, no closure, I think it bothers you, the unknown.
Yeah, it was 1 year ago that you all were crowned as champions. What were you think? How did you like the way your team approached this year as defending champs?
Well, we definitely were one of the teams to be talked about with a chance to win it again. My team had some great players, great senior leadership, and we also had the experience of having won it last year and won 4 Big 12 championships. So we had a good shot at it. And yet at the same time, we had a few grad transfers that were helping us and would have been a big addition. And they came to help us to try to win another championship. And, we were a pretty good team. And, the hard part as a coach is I've been blessed for 20 years, to be able to coach teams that, are relevant and had opportunities to win it. But, a lot of coaches don't. And this will never, ever go away. We will always remember this time in our lives. And, it'll have a little asterisk there, I guess, in the NCAA books that, there was no national champion that year.
I guess Kim Mulkey, head coach at Baylor, she was recently selected for induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame. By the way, a terrific class going in. Kim, you were an assistant at Louisiana Tech for 15 or 16 years before you got the job at Baylor. Baylor was not that good when you got there. When I looked it up, they'd had three losing seasons in the previous 6 years. What was it about Baylor that attracted you?
Well, nothing, honestly. It just happened to be the school that was on the phone when I was heading out the door over a 5-year contract that was not given to me at Louisiana Tech. Baylor just happened to call. And the only thing I knew about Baylor was my previous head coach at Louisiana Tech, Sonja Hogue, had coached there. And she was retiring again after coming out of coaching. I honestly had heard about the Branch Davidian massacre. Well, come to find out, that wasn't even in Waco, Texas. That was 15 minutes outside of Waco. Those are the things I knew about Baylor. It wasn't that I knew anything basketball-wise, didn't even know much about them in athletics, period. But the athletic director that called just convinced me to come take a look, and I was very honest with him and told him if I get a 5-year deal at Louisiana Tech, I'm not leaving. That's home, and that's where I spent 19 years of my life. And he was very, very gracious and understood, but he still, in the meantime, wanted me to come look until Louisiana Tech, decided if they were going to give me a 5-year deal or not. I came on the visit and didn't get the 5-year deal, and here I am at Baylor 20 years later.
What did Tech offer you? A 3-year deal or what?
They started with a 3-year deal. And then they moved to a – I say they, it was Dan Renaud. Let's don't kid ourselves. There was nobody else involved in that decision but President Dan Renaud, and gave me a 4-year deal, wouldn't budge. I begged him. I cried. I got on my knees, snot flying everywhere with the athletic director sitting there watching it, and he wouldn't budge. And that's when it just hit me, hey, you're not wanted here. If you can't get a 5-year deal after spending 19 years of your life there, turning down 3 head jobs, the second assistant, Christy Curry, had left to go to Purdue with a 5-year deal, it's time to move on. You've done all you can do. You've begged, you've cried, you pleaded, you've shown your blood, sweat, and tears. And I walked out of that door, and out the door I went, and here I am.
Kim, when you were finishing your career at Louisiana Tech, you made the Olympic team. You mentioned Pat Summitt coaching you. As I recall, she stood up for you. You had an injury, I believe, at some point, and she was adamant that she wanted you on that Olympic team. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We were in Taipei, Taiwan, prior to the Olympics, and we were, playing games. And I woke up one morning, and I couldn't even step on the floor. It was the weirdest thing. And I had a stress fracture in the top of my foot. And certainly, my initial thought was, I've worked all these years to be an Olympian, and here I am 4 weeks prior to the opening ceremony, and I'm going to get replaced by an alternate. But she called me into her room, and she said, that will not happen. You will be well. The physicians say just stay in shape, and it takes 4 to 6 weeks for a stress fracture to heal. And you talk about relieved and indebted to her, because she could have. She could have very easily picked up an alternate, and she didn't. And, I openly tell people how thankful I am. And 4 weeks came. And we're at the opening ceremony. I'm healthy. I'm clear. Good to go. And obviously I lost my starting spot because of that, but I didn't care. Nobody remembers who started. All we remember is you got a gold medal.
No doubt our guest Kim Mulkey, as she joins us on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline. Coach, what's it like to be a part of this class that joins the Hall of Fame, including the first Pat Summitt player, which – seems like it would have happened before now, but Tamika Catchings among so many other notables.
Well, the accomplishments of Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, good grief. I can't think of three better NBA players that won so many championships. And then you add Tamika Catchings, the NBA player in this class, and the coaches. You're honored. You're humbled. You're honored. And, you just kind of pinch yourself and go, how did I get to this point? I was never going to be a coach, and here I am today, blessed to be able to go in with this class. I'm just going to sit in the background and watch and take lots of pictures.
I'm sure they'll be doing the same as well. And can you give us an update? How are things? Granted, his season is on hold just like everybody else, but how is Kramer doing with the Cardinals?
Kramer is home with me. Flew him home immediately. They were, of course, in Jupiter. He got invited to big league camp. So he was learning and seeing how the big boys do it, and he flew home with Matt Carpenter. We have a little private airport right here in our neighborhood, and Matt Carpenter and his family, of course, are Texas people, and they have a ranch in Glen Rose, and so he came back with Kramer, and we just take it day by day. Kramer is, he can't go and work out in a batting cage. All the schools are shut down, and he can lift weights and do those things that he can do within the confines of our home, but he's like a lot of people. There's just, you can't get into facilities right now, so he's sitting and reading and hearing from his agent things that are being discussed. I think now they're discussing what Arizona possibly for the major league teams. And then he thinks, and I think, well, how are you going to have a major league season if you don't have a minor league? Because guys get hurt all the time. So it's kind of like anything, guys. Who knows what the future holds?
Mm-hmm. Kim, I was reading where you played one of the first girls to play organized baseball with boys. How old were you when that occurred?
I was 12 years old, and let me tell you the background of that. I'm not one of these that believes you hire somebody or you choose somebody to be on the team to make a scene, spectacle, or be the first. You better be darn good, and especially if you're a girl. And I had every day at recess been picked, the first one the boys picked on the teams to play football, to do whatever. And so I saw this guy drop some papers off kind of in a circular drive at the school during recess. And so nosy, I went over there, and I just wanted to see what it was. And it was the forms to fill out to try out for Dixie Youth Baseball. And so I just picked one up. I figured the PE teacher or somebody was supposed to come pick them up. So I just grabbed one, took it home to my parents, and we signed up, and I went to tryouts, and was the first player selected, and played on the Holiday Inn was the name of the team, and played shortstop and pitcher and catcher, and made the All-Star team, and then played the next 2 years of Pony League.
So that's where Kramer gets his baseball ability.
Oh, I don't know. His dad is a pretty good athlete. His dad probably should have played baseball only. His dad was a quarterback at Louisiana Tech in the early 70s when they won a Division II national championship. So he probably gets his athleticism a little from both of us.
Hey, well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Congratulations. You've accomplished so many things. The fastest to 600 wins of anybody, and what a great career you've had, and hopefully you will enjoy the ceremonies, and thank you so much for taking time to visit with us.
Hey, guys, you take care. You stay safe. I love me some Pat Summitt, and go Rocky Top. Take care.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
That is Kim Mulkey, the former star at Louisiana Tech, an Olympian under Pat Summitt at Baylor now. She's won 3 national championships, and she's been selected for the Basketball Hall of Fame.
She joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break when we return. An update from Bob Yarbrough from our sister station, News Talk 98.7. That's next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Here at The Sports Animal, we never really grew up. We just learned how to act in public most of the time.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and time for us to check in with our friend Bob Yarbrough, who joins us from News Talk 98.7, our sister station, as it's the latest on what's going on in the battle against the coronavirus. Bob, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, John. We're doing well, thank you. But COVID-19 numbers across the state and here locally, I'll jump to those in just a few seconds. The Morristown Police Department, though, announced today their chaplain there, Don Kreider, died from complications related to COVID-19. He passed away today. The Morristown Police Chief Roger Overholt said Kreider truly had the heart of a servant. He served there as chaplain at the Morristown Police Department for 20 years. Across the state, the first shipments of the 5-minute COVID-19 testing kits have arrived in Tennessee. It's the Abbott test. Abbott's the company there. It takes about 5 minutes if it's a positive result and 13 minutes or so if you're negative for the virus. It's one of the quickest tests, according to the experts, that's being made available, and we're starting to get some of these in Tennessee. So that should help in the testing aspect of things. Officials say these tests will be a main part of their supply chain starting later this week. All right, let's get to some of the numbers. The Knox County Health Department this morning around 11 o'clock released the latest COVID-19 numbers. We're at 146 confirmed cases in the county. That's up 20 from yesterday, 19 hospitalizations, 4 fatalities in this county, and 77 recovered cases. Now, across the state, the Tennessee Department of Health is reporting 4,362 coronavirus cases. That's up 224 from this time yesterday. Still 449 people hospitalized, 79 fatalities across the state, and 592 people who have recovered from COVID-19. We've got a lot of this information at newstalk987.com. Also this afternoon and tomorrow afternoon, Haller and Hilton Hill on News Talk 98.7 between 3 and 4 o'clock with a lot of information about small business loans, about the stimulus aspect of things, applying for unemployment, the virus itself, and just a variety of information with a lot of links and a lot of information. You can access that at newstalk987.com and on our social media pages on Facebook and on Twitter, which is 987 News. John?
Bob, at the top of the questions and concerns, what's next for schools? Has there been any movement and or loose planning going on in regards to when kids might be back in class?
Well, they are starting to make some movement in regards to meetings to try to sort this all out. Now, in Knox County, the school leaders held a virtual meeting yesterday where they addressed a lot of the issues. A couple of things to point out there, 180 days, that's typically the requirement for school kids to attend class. The state legislature's already waived that for this year, and they've waived it for next year as well. So that's not going to be a concern. Will they go back this year? The answer, quite simply, is they don't know just yet. What happens to proms and graduation? Again, they don't know just yet. What about those subjects that build on themselves, like math and perhaps science and those types of subjects? They're working to get a plan in place with a lot of different scenarios there. And again, it all depends, basically, John, on is how this all plays out in the next couple of weeks. We're expecting our peak numbers in Tennessee here within the next several days. A lot of that's going to determine what happens going forward with the schools. They're out until the 24th. A decision beyond that has not been made. They're going to have to wait and see what happens these next few days or next couple of weeks to see how that's going to impact the potential of going back to school this year or how it's going to impact next year. There is an emergency meeting at the state level of the school education department. They're going to discuss a lot of these things like proms and graduation. Can they still do that? How to handle the grading situation? In Knox County, the grades were frozen on the last day that they attended, which was right before spring break. So there's a lot of discussion still to be had, and they'll do that tomorrow at the state level. Possibly some new answers come from that. And, of course, if that happens, we will pass those along to you.
Yeah, that we've talked about, of course, the impact on the sports seasons. They were yet to complete the girls' championship in basketball with the boys set to play the next week. And it was this past weekend that some of the first local proms were to have taken place. So really tough on the high school seniors as well as the youngsters, who I know are missing their friends, as well as the structure to their days, don't you think?
Well, no doubt, and still to not have any answers right now, still to have to be in that wait-and-see kind of holding pattern to see exactly what goes on the next couple of weeks. You know, not knowing sometimes is worse than knowing and going ahead and making the adjustments for that. But hopefully, in the next several days, some of these things will be a bit more clear.
All right. And for all the information, newstalk987.com. You guys make it very easy for people to get there and be able to find out in a moment's notice, right?
We do. You bet. And again, the Haller and Hilton Hill information with all the links and podcasts and everything, you'll find that on the Newstalk987 social media pages. And as you mentioned, newstalk987.com. I'll see you guys again tomorrow right about this same time, John.
Bob, thank you very much. Have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And that's Bob Yarbrough of our sister station News Talk 98.7. We'll get a break. Jimmy, when we return, we look forward to Ron Higgins joining us.
Yeah, Ron will join us. He is with Tiger Rag. We'll talk to him about LSU and hopes for this season and how are they going to replace a guy named Joe Burrow.
That's next on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Once again, we head to the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline for a longtime friend of the program. Right, Jimmy? That's
exactly right. Ron Higgins, he is the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine in Baton Rouge. Ron, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing fantastic. I've seen where Louisiana's been hit pretty hard by the virus. Anything you can tell us in regard to how you and your family are doing and the folks in Baton Rouge?
Well, I mean, I think the family's doing great, and Baton Rouge is hanging in. You know, it's having been a Louisiana native, Jimmy, you know this is a party state, and we like to eat and like to party and like to drink it over anything. And having to self-quarantine and having to stay in most of the time has been tough, but I think everybody has done it in Louisiana. They've done it now for several weeks of the governor here. They listened to the governor. Of course, the governor got Ed Orgeron to do public service announcements. So, you know, who would want to go against Coach O? You know, really, I mean, at this point, he won a national championship. And Coach O would probably, I'm going to win coronavirus by myself. he did a PSA, and people are adhering to it, you know. Louisiana has been hit particularly hard, New Orleans, and, there's a theory that has a lot to do with Mardi Gras, which is a good theory, because Mardi Gras is one big drunken party for 2 weeks, and you're in crowds. So, I mean, that could be a reason. Or also, I mean, basically, you've been on Bourbon Street, you know how sanitary it is. You could just fall down on Bourbon Street and get a virus. But everybody's doing good. I mean, all things considered, you know, everybody's kind of edgy, whether it'll be football season or not, or how long it'll be delayed or whatever. But other than that, the weather's been great. People are playing golf. I haven't done it yet, but I know I will because of the way I play golf. I'm really good at social distancing. I don't get close to anybody at any time where I hit. But other than that, it's all good.
You mentioned the name of Ed Orgeron. When he was hired a few years ago, Ron, did you think there was any way in the world he could win a national championship?
I don't think he could win a national championship. I thought he'd do okay. I thought he'd do okay because he made all – because when he was at Ole Miss, he made a bunch of mistakes, and he realized all the mistakes he made. He knew exactly what he did wrong. And so I thought if he could get to a point where he could get over the hump and kind of make people believe, realize that he can coach, and he's not as dumb as he's made out to be because of his Cajun voice and deep accent, that he might have a chance. And, you know, I mean, the transfer portal has been really good to him. I mean, in the spring of 2018, it didn't look good for LSU. They were coming off a year. They just fired their offensive coordinator with a half to 1 year. They had Matt Canada, who ran a bunch of motion and shifts. LSU's offense looked like the Harlem Globetrotters weave in football. A bunch of people jumping offside and all this motion and stuff. And the SEC defenses really weren't fooled. Got rid of him. Put Ensminger back in charge of the offense. The quarterbacks looked awful in the spring. The offense looked like garbage in the spring of 2018. And then they had two graduate transfers come in. One was a place kicker named Cole Tracy, who had 1 year. He was the best field goal kicker in Division II. And the other guy was named Joe Burrow, who got beat out for the starting job at Ohio State. And they kind of laid the foundation in 2018. Cole Tracy hardly didn't miss a kick all year. All the field goals that LSU didn't cash in the year before, they cashed in. Went 10-3. LSU got better offensively as the year went along. And then they brought in the wonder boy Joe Brady from the Saints, who was basically a quality control guy. Even Orgeron told me a couple of weeks ago, he goes, "I didn't know he was going to be that good. I mean, I had no idea he was that good." He revamped the passing game. It fit Burrow perfectly what he did. LSU had a bunch of veteran leadership, had good athletes, had guys. Joe Brady worked with the receivers to make sure they didn't drop any more balls like they did the year before. It's one of those years where everything comes together. Orgeron made a good decision to finally go to the spread and bite the bullet. He knew even in 2018 that LSU could never win a national championship averaging 30 points a game. He knew basically now you have to score about 45 a game to win a national championship, which you do. And he needed the offense. It took advantage of the spread and the receivers and up-tempo, and he did all those things. And they just went outscored everybody. Defense didn't play great until later in the year, but really didn't care. Offense was like, "Well, we don't care what the defense is doing. We're going to score enough to win," which is what they did.
Ron, I thought Burrow showed signs toward the end of his first year that he could be really good, and I thought he had a heck of a bowl game against Central Florida. But did you have any idea he could be as special as he was?
I knew he'd be pretty good. I mean, nobody could predict. The guy throws a touchdown pass per quarter for 15 games. Now, nobody can predict 60 touchdown passes. That's just stupid. But I know he could be good, and not like he did. You know, toward the end of the year in 2018, they began to let him run a little bit more. And the reason they didn't let him run earlier in the year because Myles Brennan was banged up, and they didn't have a backup quarterback. So they didn't want him to run. And, of course, Joe likes to – he likes to run. He doesn't he doesn't step out of bounds too much either, which kind of worried the coaches. But he did play well in the bowl game. Ensminger decided to go to an up-tempo offense, and you could see it just fit Burrow perfectly. And when they brought in Brady a few weeks later and start putting in the spread, the passing game, and more RPOs, it just fit. And I mean, look, LSU fans were in shock after the first five series of the opening game against Georgia Southern. And LSU scored on five touchdowns on five straight series and throwing the ball, just going downfield, bam, bam, bam. And the LSU fans were like, what's going on with this? Like, we haven't seen this forever. What's this deal? And then the LSU went out and did it against Texas, and they went against everybody, and they just kept scoring. It just didn't matter to them. They gave up 31 points the second half to Texas and never trailed. I mean, they gave up 28 to Alabama the second half and never trailed because their offense, like, we're going to come back and score. I went back and looked it up, did research. 65% of the time that LSU got scored on by an opponent, they came back the next series and scored touchdowns or field goals, mostly touchdowns.
Ron, it's always great to talk to you and certainly appreciate your time. One of the things that was most impressive to me about Burrow was just his ability to extend plays. There were times that he would sidestep to the left, scramble to the right, as you mentioned, his ability to run, even though he perhaps needs to shy a little bit away from contact. But what did you think of that aspect of his game? Because to me, that blows any of the, oh, he's just a system quarterback talk out of the water. It's just all of the intangibles he has, throwing the deep ball, the short pass, you name it.
Yeah, and he worked really hard in the off season on sliding around the pocket, just by feel, and his scrambling ability was just unreal. I mean, you saw it against Georgia, and you saw it against Oklahoma, where people were diving in the air. He scrambled away, and his completion percentage was like the highest in the nation for somebody scrambling out of the pocket. I mean, his accuracy was unbelievable. He had a bunch of good receivers who worked open. But, yeah, he knew when to bail, and he knew when to kind of hang in there, and he knew when to kind of, just tuck it and get hit. You know, I mean, he didn't throw very many bad balls last year. And, I mean, probably really most of the time he had three receivers open every play. And that's how – this offense was hard to defend for this reason. The receivers, as they ran their routes, would read the defense and then change their routes according to what the defense was giving them. And Burrow was up to Burrow to read the receivers, changing their routes, knowing where they were going. That's why it was extremely tough to defend, because you can look at it on film and say, we're going to play this defense against them. But then as the play unfolds, the receivers are reading what the defense is doing and changing the routes. And Burrow was smart enough to know where everybody was going, and that's why he rarely made a bad throw last year.
Well, he also showed just how smart he was in a way of endearing himself to his fans to finish his college career. What was your reaction to just the idea, the execution, and how well done it was to change the last part of the spelling of his last name with the E-A-U-X?
Yeah, that was his idea. That was his idea before the last home game of the year. He really adapted well down here. I mean, except there are a few things. I mean, one time he said he didn't understand. He goes, other day I got invited to a hurricane party. And I'm a hurricane party? They have parties for hurricanes down here? I mean, they all gather around and go drink and they have a hurricane party? He goes, I told the guy, I'm not doing the hurricane party. I don't do those. But he adapted really well. He was well-liked with his teammates. He earned their respect the right way. He came in, and basically the first couple of days he was here in the summer, won every sprint they had, never opened his mouth, just kept winning all drill after drill after drill, and throwing pass after pass perfectly, and they all kind of gravitated toward him, and they loved his toughness. Very first game against Miami, a lineman from Miami nailed him. He got up, and Miami lineman started talking stuff to him, and Burrow just kind of went blankety blank 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 back at him, and all the LSU offensive linemen were like, "Wow, we love this guy." He would not talk. He would not talk smack during the game unless somebody talked to him. Like last year, they're playing Vanderbilt. He got knocked out of bounds in the Vanderbilt sideline, and they were just talking stuff to him. And he starts running back the next hill. He turns around. He holds up five fingers and he says, "We're going to put 50 up on you today. We're putting 50 on y'all today. Let me let you know, 50. We're putting 50 up on you." And they put a bunch. Yeah, they did. The LSU scored 28 points on Vanderbilt the first quarter in about 5 minutes. So yeah, but he's at least cocky guy I know as far as being a quarterback. He's very, confident and very prepared, but never bragged about anything. The whole team played hungry all year. I mean, they beat Alabama, and you know, God, it was a great deal. And then afterwards, we talked about, yeah, but we should have scored more points. I mean, we made these mistakes here. And he's right. We made these mistakes here. There wasn't one game last year that that, except for maybe Oklahoma, when they scored, he threw seven touchdowns at first half, which is still like watching a touch football game, that after the game, nobody said, this is our best game of the year. That was like our best. They never said that. They would just say, you know, we got to get better. We got to get better. There's things we got to correct. And they point them out, and they were right. And I think that was another secret of that team last year, that they played hungry all year. You know, they played like they had a point to prove. And they had a lot of guys on that team that had a point to prove. Burrow was a guy, was a transfer. Thaddeus Moss was a transfer, a tight end, Randy Moss's son. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back from Baton Rouge, wasn't highly rated. I mean, he played with a chip on his shoulder. Had a bunch of guys. The receiver Jefferson, he was barely got on the team when he was recruited. He's like they gave him a walk-on's number, and they gave him like a walk-on locker, and he was the last guy they signed in a recruiting class. And all he did was, you know, catch like 115, 120 balls last year. Will be a first-round draft choice. He had a bunch of guys like that play hungry. Again, once in a lifetime team, you know. Can't be duplicated, and you just hope you can have something close to that.
I guess Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag, you led me into my next question. How good do you think Miles Brennan can be, or is he going to be the quarterback?
Yeah, I think he'd be the quarterback, yeah. I think Miles would be good. It's a tough act to follow. I mean he can't be Burrow. I'll say this, he has a stronger arm than Burrow. He does. But as far as knowing where to go with the ball and as smooth as Burrow did, and Burrow's knowledge, Miles isn't there yet, and I don't know if he'll ever get there because Burrow's on some kind of other plane that nobody ever seen. But Miles can be a good quarterback. Or as Ron is confident, he can be a good quarterback. They've got a bunch of good running backs back. Their top three behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire are back, and they all played pretty well. They got all the receivers back except for Jefferson. They have the Blitnikoff winner back, Jamar Chase. He's back. Their best defensive player on the secondary is back. It's hard to believe because they have two secondary guys. Both of them will be in the first or second round, and one of them's a Tharp winner, and they weren't the best defensive back last year. The best defensive back last year was a freshman. Derek Stingley Jr., he's back. Mm-hmm. They got to replace a bunch of linebackers, but they just signed a graduate transfer from North Dakota State, who they like a lot, 6'2", 240, a tackling machine for three-time national champions in Division 1A. They knew about him because he played against Bo Pelini's Youngstown State team three straight years and killed them. So Bo knew about him. Of course, Bo's back as defensive coordinator. Defensive line is got to replace a couple of people. They think they can have a good year. Their schedule's hard. I look at their schedule. I mean, honestly, I think probably the best they can do is 9-3. You know, it's a hard schedule. They have Texas early at home, whenever that's going to be. But their last two games on the road are at Auburn and at A&M. And that's a unique schedule twist for LSU to have Auburn that late and then have them on the road that late and play their last two games on the road. So it's a bit different. But they had another really good recruiting year. They're happy with the guys they got. They'll probably have a couple of freshmen to start, including a tight end. But when that happens, when the season will start, nobody knows. We'll just see. You know, I mean, Orgeron goes to work every day. He's in his office. It's about 5 miles from his house, and he gets here at 6 o'clock, goes out on his patio, and you know, prays to the football gods to have a football season, and he goes inside his office and lifts weights on his weight bench and looks at recruit film, game film all day. That's what he does.
Do you think they're going to miss Joe Brady, or do you think Ensminger picked up enough from Brady to where they can continue that?
I think Ensminger picked up enough. I think Joe Brady was unique. They divide the play calls. Ensminger called 75% of the plays, and Joe Brady basically called the red zone offensive plays and short distance plays, short down distance plays. I was just saying, and Ensminger called the other stuff. They worked really well together, even though, you know, Joe Brady's like 29 or 30, and Ensminger's like 62, you know, 63 years old. No, they could discuss the same bands from the same era, but they really worked really well together. it's kind of different now. They got a veteran guy, Scott Linehan from the NFL, been around. It'll be interesting to see what they do, you know, as far as throwing the ball. I mean, Brady had a big effect on the pass receivers. In 2018, they dropped a lot of balls. In 2019, last summer, they called it the summer of 10,000 catches. They had a goal to catch 10,000 balls last summer, the receivers. And he had some very unique drills that they did to concentrate on catching the passes, such as standing behind a closed door and getting a jugs machine and firing a pass at the door and opening the door right as the ball comes through and the receiver had to catch it behind the door. I can tell you it worked. They hardly dropped a pass last year, especially in crowds. Yeah, it worked.
Well, Ron, hey, great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for joining us. You be safe and hope all the folks in Louisiana will be safe as well. Thank you.
Yeah, we're trying. All right, we'll see you.
Okay.
Thanks,
see
Ron.
Ron Higgins, and he is the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine.
Joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, we'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
This ain't your mama's radio station, unless you've got a really cool mama. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. In fact, we come back to say so long for this hour. Jimmy, we look forward to turning our attention to the National Football League next.
Yeah, we'll be joined by John McClain. I always love having him on. Get his insights on the NFL, his thoughts on the draft, and other topics involving the NFL.
That's all coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.